Good afternoon. If everybody would, please, if you have find a seat and quiet in and settle in so we can get this going, that'd be greatly appreciated. All right. So we're now called to order the special call MPC meeting for July 25th, 2023. excuse me. First, we want to pause for invocation, and then we'll proceed into the Pledge of Allegiance. Heavenly Father, we ask that you guide each and individual within this process. We ask that you impart a spirit of cooperativeness, collaboration, and understanding. We ask that you cover each and individual that is in this room and guide us to make the decisions that is good for the betterment of the community. These and all things we ask in your name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the
Okay. All right. So for staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating in our procedures are as follows. The agenda is broken up into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with staff recommendation and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. Okay, for each agenda item on a regular business, the staff will make a presentation, and the staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for public comment. If you wish to comment on an item that the board is considering at the time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give that to staff. If you're participating virtually, you could use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the raise your hand feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone, and we ask that you unmute your microphone as well. At the end of the allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you're not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand, or if in person, fill out a speaker card and you will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. Just as a bit of housekeeping, we ask that everybody that is here that has a cell phone, which is likely everyone, to ensure that those are on mute. If you have to take a call, please don't answer in here. Please step out into the hallway so that we can make sure that everybody's comments, concerns, questions are captured clearly for the record. There's a lot of people in here, so aside conversations will start to get loud if multiple of them occurring at the same time. So we ask that you keep that to an absolute minimum. Or if there is a necessary conversation, we ask that you step out into the hallway. Because again, we want things to be heard accurately for the record. We want to make sure that this meeting continues, is allowed to be able to go flow seamlessly. And we want to keep it orderly. I do not want to have to ask anybody to leave for being a disruption. But if that is indeed the case, it will happen. All right. Thank you. So we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. And that is approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve agenda.
Second.
All right. Any discussion on that? Okay, all in favor of approving the agenda, we'll do a voice vote.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries and the agenda is approved. Now we move on to the notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There are none listed. The next item on the agenda is items requested to be removed from the final agenda. And there is one, and that is a map amendment, and the property identification numbers are 07-004-001-006-013-015-018-019-20, and that's a rezone from a TC2 zoning type to a S-PD, and that petition number is 23-001-408-ZA.
Motion to remove file number 23-001408-ZA from the agenda.
Why would you second?
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? We'll do a voice vote on this as well. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried and the item is approved. The item is removed from the final agenda. Okay, then we'll move on to the items requested to be withdrawn. There are none listed. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Again, the consent agenda consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and for which no known objections have been identified nor anticipated by staff. Any objections raised at the meeting will result in the item being moved to the regular agenda. Let's see. For the record, I don't have any items on the, am I missing a page? I think I'm missing a page. My apologies. I see it. The item on the agenda is, the consent agenda is the approval of the June 13th, 2023 meeting minutes.
Motion to approve.
Why would a second?
All right. There's a motion on the floor and a second made. There's no discussion. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor? Any opposed? All right, motion carries and the meeting minutes from the consent agenda is approved. Next item on the agenda is old business. There's none listed. Now we'll go into the regular agenda. First item there is a special use at 1220 Barnard Street, request to allow accessory alcohol sales within a restaurant. And this petition number is 23-002-961-ZA. Ms. Leto.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Melissa Leto, MPC staff. The 1220 Barnard Street, is requesting an approval of a special use pursuant to Section 3.10 of the Savannah Zoning Ordinance to establish an accessory alcohol sales use within a restaurant. The special use process includes review by the Planning Commission and the Savannah City Council. Should the use be approved by the City Council, a permit will be granted by the City of Savannah, which will be governed by the permit enforcement criteria outlined in Article 3 of the Savannah Zoning Ordinance. Let me provide you with some background on the property, and specifically the Airstream itself, which is the structure for the restaurant. 1220 Barnard Street is a non-contributing resource in the National Register Victorian District and the local Victorian Historic District. It is located within a residential and commercial area surrounded by houses and the SCAD Eckberg Hall for Fashion and Accessory Design at the intersection of Barnard and Henry Streets. A COA, a Certificate of Appropriateness, was approved on June 26, 2023 for two new single non-illuminated signs to be installed into the existing pylon sign at the Streamliner Diner. The Streamliner was used as a diner known as Sandfly Barbecue, but has since changed ownership. The Savannah College of Art and Design has renovated the interior and will be changing the signage to reflect their new restaurant name of Strange Bird. Subject parcel is square in shape. See if I can provide you with. A mapping of it. So this is the subject parcel. Subject parcel is square in shape, consisting of 0.29 acres or 12,632 square feet in lot area, and contains approximately 105 feet of frontage along Barnard Street and approximately 120 feet along both West Duffy Street and West Henry Street. The property abuts residential housing. Property is also zoned TC1, Traditional Commercial 1. The petitioner intends to open a small restaurant within the Streamliner, serving smoked meats, tacos, burritos, and veggie sides, as well as beer and wine. The restaurant will also have outdoor cafe seating with 12 seats. The petitioner is requesting a special use permit to allow for accessory alcohol sales within the restaurant use, specifically beer and wine only. The properties surrounding the subject parcel are a mix of commercial and residential uses. Let me provide you with a site plan. So this is the site plan for the subject parcel. This is the existing structure. They are leased to dedicate 10 parking spaces on site. They also have shared parking on this side through SCAD. There is a walk-in cooler, a smoker that's covered within the walls. And then there is a an area that's enclosed for the dumpster as well. Let me go over the review criteria for the special use permit regarding section 3.10.8. The comprehensive plan future land use map designates the subject property as traditional commercial. The traditional commercial classification allows for business areas in close proximity to downtown Savannah or in outlying historically settled areas. This category includes commercial uses that should be compatible with the character and scale of adjacent neighborhoods, most often found among collectors and arterials. Characteristics include walkability, limited or on-street parking, and multi-tenant retail. Staff finds the proposed restaurant with accessory alcohol sales is compatible with the parcel's future land use designation. The city regulates operational hours for business selling alcohol from 7 a.m. until 3 a.m. The petitioner is proposing operational hours be the following: Monday through Thursday from 11 a.m. until 9 p.m., as well as providing 10 off-street parking spaces. And the applicant is proposing two shifts with 4 to 6 employees per shift in the building at one time. The estimated total number of employees, including full-time and part-time, would be 10. There's also an enclosed area to the rear of the property where I showed you in the site plan for the dumpster. The structure has enough interior square footage to accommodate a restaurant with accessory alcohol sales use. The interior space is approximately 950 square feet in size. Petitioner is proposing 33 indoor seats. And the property has over 10 off-street parking spaces dedicated in their lease. Per section 9.3.7.D, no minimum parking is required. However, the petitioner is providing 10 off-street parking spaces. Staff finds adequate public facilities are available to support the proposed use and that there will be no loss, destruction, or damage to any item of historic importance. Based upon the compatibility with the comprehensive plan and the ability to meet the criteria for a special use permit, staff recommends approval with conditions. One, that the special use permit shall be non-transferable. Two, accessory alcohol sales for beer and wine only, and the operational hours shall be from 11 a.m. until 9 p.m. The agent for the petitioner is here as well, Joshua Yellen, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Leto. Any questions for staff? Ms. Jarrett?
I just wanted to know where the 10 outdoor spaces would be.
Oh. They're with on the site. Let me show you with the site plan. So there are more parking, but within their lease, they included 10 parking off-street parking spaces here. And then they're able to, if they get overflow, the petitioner mentioned that they would be able to use the right side of the parking lot as well.
I thought there was outdoor seating, though.
Oh, you asked about outdoor seating.
Yes.
That would be for a cafe permit seating that they plan on applying for, which I would assume would be facing Barnard Street.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any more questions for staff? All right. Thank you. We'll now hear from the petitioner. Please state your name for the record.
I'm sorry. It's not Joshua Yellen.
That's okay. Good morning. Patrick Connell here. I'm not Josh Yellen, but I appreciate the favorable comparison. This was the Sandfly Streamliner, Sandfly Barbecue. They did have beer and wine sales there. So this is really not a change of use. I believe we're here because somehow Sandfly Streamliner opened up without a license. Or without the special use permit, excuse me, but they did have the alcohol license. Staff recommends approval. I'm here to answer any questions that you might have. This owner, just so you know, also operates the Farm Restaurant in Bluffton, Common Thread Restaurant here in Savannah, and also operates the cafe that's within the Jepson Center, all of which have alcohol licenses. Has never had any issue with that, very conscientious, and happy to answer any questions that you have about this project.
Thank you. Any questions for the petitioner? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now accept public comment. And I, as of right now, I only have one speaker card. Do we have any online? Okay. So we'll allow for Patrick Connell. That was your, oh, yeah, you did say that. My apologies. My apologies. I heard you say your name and it just completely left. All right. So with that, we don't seem to have any public comments. So we'll go back to the board. And I assume right now we should be able to enter into a vote or, well, entertain a motion, excuse me.
No, a motion to approve with staff's recommendation, three items.
Why would he second?
So the motion is on the floor made by Mr. Noah and seconded by Mr. Wildwoody to approve the petition was as outlined in the staff report. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none, we will now enter a vote. Let me get my notes for me. And we'll start off, we're going to go backwards today. Mr. Wildwoody.
Yes.
Mr. Notrika.
Yes.
Mr. Noah.
Yes.
Mr. Melder.
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett.
Yes.
Mr. Irvin.
Yes.
Ms. Epstein.
Yes.
Ms. Bowles.
Yes.
And Ms. Amick.
Yes.
All right. Motion carries and the petition is approved. So we'll move to the next item on the agenda. That is amendment to the general development plan for 23-002714-plan at 703 Louisville Road.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Edward Morrow, MPC staff. The present request is for the purpose of revising a general development master plan that was previously approved for development at 703 Louisville Road. This is a property that was previously rezoned in March 2019 under a now legacy zoning district, the PRIPD. There were several conditions to zoning that were placed by the Savannah City Council at that time. It was also rezoned in conjunction with a general development plan under a particular clause of the ordinance that required some additional assurance that the proposed development would be consistent with the area. Those conditions, I won't run through them verbatim, but they specified a particular unit mix that was composed of certain bedroom types, three, two, and one bedroom units. There was a 20% green space requirement, requirement that the development complied with the city's current stormwater ordinance. There was also a requirement to relocate the head house of the an unlisted historic structure, the head house of the freight depot building that was constructed, I believe, in 1929. And so all of these were conditions that remained on the site, and they actually remain present. So in June 2020, the original petitioner at that time brought the case back for consideration by this board. And at that time, they sought to amend the parking count and the unit mixture. They eliminated three bedroom units in order to concentrate on studios, one and two bedroom units. No changes were proposed to the building in terms of footprint, height, or any amendments to the conditions that were placed by council. So that brings us to the current petition. Savannah College of Art and Design has brought forth an amended general development site plan for the purpose of constructing 220 student housing units on the property. The site plan would develop something that is similar in height and scale to the previously proposed development. However, it would be in two buildings, a six-story building and a seven-story building, with the two buildings containing a mixture of studio suites and two- and four-bedroom units. Each building would also feature above-ground parking in a garage. The site for development is just outside the Downtown Historic Overlay District. It is adjoining DX zoning all around on each side, and several of the parcels are currently developed as SCAD student housing. Signs were posted on the subject property in order to notify the public that there was to be a meeting today and that under consideration would be the revised general development plan. Also, the applicant informed staff that they had met with several relevant community groups in order to notify them and kind of get their input on the proposed development. The proposal itself is geared towards student use. It does anticipate a mixture of travel modes, including bicycle, moped, motorcycle, and also connectivity with local transit options, which SCAD has very robust student transportation. There's also a CAT stop nearby. The plan is going to place a 26-foot central drive in the middle of the site, and the pavement that traverses the rear of the two buildings would be for the purpose of hiding things like your garbage dumpster pad, things of that nature. So it does run up right against the canal, just like the previous development plan. The improved frontage on the site, however, would feature the stops for local transit options in order to kind of prevent and shelter students from the high volume of traffic on Louisville Road coming into town. The site would be served by city water and sewer, and it is in compliance with the comprehensive land use plan, which was amended back in March of 2019. Staff found in its analysis that the site plan submitted is likely to be more compatible with the surrounding land uses than that previously approved. And for that reason, in addition to the fact that they have also agreed to comply with all of the requirements placed on the rezoning by Savannah City Council in 2019, staff recommends approval. That concludes staff review.
Thank you. Any questions for staff? Ms. Jarrett?
Is the parking adequate for the facility?
The proposed parking does meet the requirements for the proposal itself.
Okay. If I recall correctly, in the original plan, there was a boardwalk that was open for a continuous greenway back and forth along the canal as part of the canal district plan. Is that going to be available to the public, or is it just going to be available for SCAD students?
I apologize. I should have put this up. The site plan is a little bit different, and so I'm going to show now some of the features of the previous plan are not present in this plan, but this is a colored rendering that I received yesterday, and I wanted to put this up for you. I do not believe in our conversations that any of these new features are going to be open to the public generally. I do think they are for student use.
But so again, it's taken out of the tax base. the property will no longer be taxable for property tax, correct?
I cannot speak to that.
That is correct, Ms. Jarrett.
And there is no access for the public along the canal for walking or?
That is not something that was discussed with staff.
The bus access is on the street?
Yes, ma'am. There is a pull-off that is proposed, and staff recommended that there would be shelters along Louisville Road in order to offer a safe spot for students to wait for a local transit.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Irvin?
Okay. Oh, that's Ms. Kent. Turn your mic.
Ms. Bowles.
Good afternoon. You mentioned that there were meetings with the community. What were the outcomes?
I'm unsure of the specific outcome. The petitioner is definitely here. Mr. Grant can speak to the nature of their conversations, but just to run through those for you let me pull back up that staff report. I can at least let you know the specific groups that I'm informed they met with. The Savannah Campus Vice President met with Cheryl Edwards, the president of the Brickyard Neighborhood Association. Also, representatives of SCAD met with Alderwoman Brunetta Lanier and Dr. Deidre Grimm, who is the executive director of the Forsyth Farmers Market. Additionally, the petitioner met with Coastal Heritage Society and the Historic Savannah Foundation did provide a letter of support that has been attached to the agenda. We're also aware of the fact that efforts were made to reach out to the Savannah Ogeechee Canal Society, who reached out to us specifically expressing concerns about downstream development. These are all of the contacts that staff was made aware of. Sure.
Ms. Jarrett.
No public citizens group, though, correct? Open to the public?
Not to our knowledge, no, ma'am.
Mr. Wildwood.
I just want to clarify. This is a private development prior to that provided access to the canal and walking. Now it's being going to be student housing, tax exempt, funded by the taxpayers, but no taxpayer access.
There are some differences between the previously proposed development and this.
Is my statement accurate?
Yes, sir.
Can I ask a question about which portion? What is
along the
taxpayers?
Canal? Along the canal was actually intended to be a walkway for the public that would be open up the whole area to more of a walking. You could actually get to the new civic center by walkway, and now that is no longer apparent. I just want to make sure. Thank you.
Just real quick, I'm going to circle back around on a request that I made of the public. I know we have some pretty hot items on the agenda today, but if we can keep the murmurs down, greatly appreciate it. Anything else for staff? All right, thank you. We hear from the petitioner.
Morning, everyone. My name is Michael Roach. I'm a civil engineer with Thomas and Hutton. Definitely appreciate the opportunity to have us bring this project before you guys today. I have with me the team, Brad Grant from SCAD, Josh Yellen, the real Josh Yellen, and Patrick Phelps from Hanson Architects. I do want to start off by thanking MPC and city staff. There's definitely a lot of effort put into this, reviewing the GDP, kind of working through the conditions, making sure that before this came before you guys, that we actually had a complete project that I think we all could support. As indicated in the staff report, you know, this project's been around for several years. Seen several changes in the area, you know, namely the progression of the Canal District, as well as the construction of the new arena. A big part of that Canal District is the Canal District Initiative are the improvements to the Springfield Canal, which, you know, you'll see on the revised plan. That's something that we've worked with the city to accommodate. We've also worked closely with staff to ensure, as Edward mentioned, you know, all previous zoning conditions are being met or exceeded. One of those being including moving materials in a northeasterly direction in order to close up the head house and preserve that. That was a bit definitely in all the progression of the project. That was a big push from everybody. We've also significantly increased the amount of green space that's been shown on previous plans. So something that I think we all definitely are proud of as well. Another aspect of the plan where we improved upon previous versions are impact to traffic. As Edward mentioned, SCAT has a very robust transportation system. They provided comprehensive transportation in Savannah for over 40 years. They're going to provide parking for the 20% of students that they know are going to bring their cars. And for the remainder of students, they're going to provide the B-line, which moves over 50,000 riders per week. For all these reasons, we definitely agree with staff that the proposed development, you know, is more compatible with the surrounding area. You know, we fully support staff report, and we ask that you guys follow staff recommendation for approval of this master plan.
Thank you, sir. Does anybody else from your team need to speak, or?
I think we're available for questions. Okay. But
thank you. All right. Well, Mr. Wildwood, I got you.
There are planned improvements to the canal. Is that part of what you're going to be doing is making some improvements to the canal, at least a part of your project?
Those canal improvements are part of city's plan for improving drainage for the entire basin. And so we are working our plan around those proposed city improvements.
Okay, so you're not really participating in the canal improvements?
We are working with the city together on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The question I raised earlier was, what was the outcome of the meetings that you had? And if you could just address that, because I'm looking at the list of community outreach opportunities that you had, and I'm seeing that there was one letter of support from the Historic Savannah Foundation, but not from the Foresight Farmers Market or Coastal Heritage Society, Brickyard Association, the others. So if you could address that.
Yeah. Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Brad Grant. I'm SCAD's Senior Vice President for Development. So I've been with the institution 28 years. And so this is a project that we're bringing before you today. So you had questions specifically about the outreach that we did, ma'am? So we've, as we said, we reached out to the Coastal Heritage Society, to various aldermen and alderwomen, in addition to the Historic Savannah Foundation and the Okeechee Savannah Canal Society. So we've answered. So I went through the entire plan with them, and I answered any types of questions that they had. And, you know, any questions that they had that I felt were unresolved, I went back to the team, and we resolved them in our plans. So at this point, I'm not aware of any issues that anybody that I met with expressed to me that we did not resolve.
Just if I might follow up,
yes,
I was just trying to get an understanding of where they were generally supportive.
Oh, absolutely. To my knowledge, everyone that we met with was supportive of our plan. I mean, understand, this is something that has been out there for a number of years. And, you know, we talked about, you know, the previous developers' plans for the project. And the reality is that they didn't move forward, and they haven't moved forward in a number of years. The project itself is set unused and unavailable in any way to any persons for, you know, now almost a decade. We're looking to revive this section of town and invest quite a bit of money. One of the things that I would note is that we expect to invest over $3 million in environmental remediation on the land, which will have health benefits to everyone in the surrounding area, including the nearby Brickyard communities and Keller Brownsville and everyone, even downstream of the canal. So, I mean, we're proud of this development. We know that it's going to be the best thing for the community, and we look forward to continuing.
Mr. Milder.
Mr. Grant, how many students will be living on the site?
So the facility will accommodate up to 800 students. The reality is that we don't program at 100%. There are residential assistants that take up, you know, a good number of the units. They have single bedrooms. Although the rooms are built to accommodate up to two. Then, of course, there's accommodations as well. So we would think probably somewhere around 700, but it could accommodate up to 800.
And how many residential units does your petition
220.
State? 220?
220, yes, sir.
So that's four residents per residential unit?
There's a mixture. Some of them are studios, some of them are three-bedroom, and there's four-bedroom mix. So up to the standard suite that we have is two bedrooms and then two students in each bedroom. And that configuration would be four students at a maximum. Mm-hmm.
In the presentation that staff gave, mm-hmm. or perhaps it was the engineer, that 20% of students would have cars. How are you certain about that number?
Right. So what we do is we look at all of our properties and we look at the number of parking stickers that we issue to students. And what we find is that in a community of this type, that there's about a 20% utilization of parking stickers. And the students that have parking stickers are not able to drive to, are not able to park on campus. So there's not a lot of reasons for students to bring cars. The only time that we see students bring cars is that they have employment off campus that they need to go back and forth. But generally our students take, especially in these types of communities, these are freshmen and sophomore communities, typically don't bring cars. So we see about 20% of them that do. And of those 20%, there's around 27% that are moved in a day. Mm-hmm. If you look at the traffic engineering, trip generation, student housing is about a fourth of typical multifamily housing in terms of the trips that are generated by a dweller.
I think that the concern would be students that don't have a SCAD Spark parking sticker but still have
sure.
a car because those cars end up on city street parking. So I think it's really about drilling down on that number. And then where do the 20% of stickered cars park at for this facility?
For this, they would park on site, so that number works. And then in addition to that, you know, we also have the Hive, and then we have a surplus of parking at the Hive, you know, both functionally and by ordinance. If you look at the Google Maps overview, the entire top deck of the Hive is unused. So we know that we have a surplus of parking in the area, and frankly, there's not off-street parking in this area, so they would park at the Hive or they would park at this facility.
Mm-hmm. And can you describe, because I think that they're probably the development agreement that SCAD has to negotiate with the city if this were to move forward regarding the canal, the planned canal improvements, public access either along the north or the south end,
mm-hmm.
The retention of the head house and those things that the previous development agreement with the previous developer, which to your point has not moved forward in 10 years, but can you describe what that development agreement?
Yeah, certainly. So there's a development agreement that exists between the previous developer and the city that outlines how this property will be developed, and the certain conditions that were put on the previous developer were put into this development agreement. So as it existed previously, the developer was to contribute about $1.5 million towards the city's work that would be completed around the canal. So to partially fund those improvements that were happening. And then of course, you know, SCAD expects to work with the city in the same regard and contribute to those improvements as well.
And in fact, a development agreement would have to be
a development agreement
executed.
will have to be executed. That's correct.
If this development works.
Absolutely. The city and SCAD will work together on a development agreement where SCAD will participate financially in the development of the canal retaining wall. Absolutely. And other conditions as well.
Can you describe any plans for connectivity along the canal?
The connectivity would be the sidewalk in front of the property. To the north of this property. the connectivity. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that ties in well, because I was thinking about the connectivity question as well. Right now, I know the city has plans, and as part of the overall canal district revitalization, to improve the historic viaduct that goes over Boundary. And so where that viaduct comes across really kind of comes down and would lend a more kind of centralized exit for many pedestrians coming and hitting that part of Lewisville Road. So I think, just from a obviously, with the number of students that SCAD has proposed for this area, pedestrian connectivity is very important to them, as much important to them as it is, I think, to the community. So making sure that connectivity does exist will be part of the plan. We've had some discussions with the city about it. Obviously, safety and security of the facility and students is also going to have to be part of that coordination. But I think just where that, where the viaduct comes across, providing that kind of that pedestrian connectivity point to the canal district really kind of hits, like I said, more about the middle of the property, which then kind of lends the connectivity, it ties in well with kind of running around, to the sidewalk and then,
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Irwin.
Two questions. I heard your answer to our city manager. I didn't understand anything you said.
Okay.
Are you saying that the public will have access to it or not?
On the canal side? No, sir. That would be secure entry for our students.
And the reason why we're asking is that, and the reason why Ms. Jarrett asked, and you heard some questions asked, is when we were sold this project the first time, we were assured this would be part of it, that they would have that public access there. That was part of it. And so now that's changed. That's why you're hearing those questions being asked. The second thing I will ask you about, and I heard your concern about pedestrian safety. I'm equally concerned about citizenry safety.
Certainly.
A lot of cars travel up and down that roadway, and that's a very narrow passage at Boundary. I think it's Boundary Street. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? How are we ensuring that increased traffic is not going to impact adversely the citizens that use that roadway regularly? Because before, if I'm not mistaken, that was addressed previously, and I've not heard that in this discussion.
Right. So we understand that the city plans a roundabout in that area, and we've seen plans and we've discussed it with the city, but that would be the city's development. That would be the city's re-engineering of that right. Interchange.
Well, and I also think just as far as this development is concerned, based off of the mass transit, the transportation network that SCAD does have in place, you're going to see less cars on the road as a result of this development. I think B, we also have what this development can do to help pedestrian safety and connectivity is, we are proposing on-street parking on Lewisville, as well as a bus pull-off, which is going to pull that sidewalk and that connectivity off the road and the travel. It provides some buffer there. So I think this development, does improve that the pedestrian connectivity and the safety along Lewisville Road.
So with respect to traffic, are you saying the roundabout is going to prevent or slow down traffic from being in that area?
I'm sorry. What I would say, as far as just focusing on this development and kind of the merits of this development, what SCAD currently has proposed with this development plan is actually going to put fewer cars on the road than what the previous development included.
Fewer cars from SCAD, but not from the citizens that travel that area. I'm concerned about the citizens that drive from the areas of Brickyard, Cloverdale, Augusta Avenue. Even myself, when I'm headed over to Carolina, I travel that route, and I'm concerned that we're going to, irrespective of what you're saying, you have traffic from the citizens of the city of Savannah traveling there, notwithstanding your SCAD students. I'm concerned about what are we going to do with the roadway there, because the previous time we voted on this, the discussion was about how we were going to do curb cuts, et cetera, to make sure that the road was widened, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a part of this plan as well?
Yeah, it is. Yes, all the same Lewisville Road improvements, the curb cuts in the same location, that's remained unchanged.
I think Ms. Jarrett is far more involved with that aspect than I am, but I do recall that being a part of what we talked about. So that will be a part of this.
Absolutely. And we haven't changed any of that. All of that's as it was.
Thank you.
Okay.
Jared, go ahead.
I have a few items I'd like to go back to. You met with an awful lot of group leaders. Did you meet with the public at all to discuss this project?
We haven't had a public meeting, no, ma'am.
Okay. Also, I see that our notes say that because of the college use and local transit options, et cetera, you're entitled to a 50% parking reduction, but you're asking for an 80% parking reduction. Is that correct?
No, Josh.
Pardon me, Josh Yellen. They are not asking for an 80% parking reduction. The parking spaces provided on site are in accordance with the 50% that's permitted.
Okay.
Newso. The 80% reduction was SCAD talking about the practical considerations and the actual on the ground operations of the site that they see at their other properties, where typically students, being only 20% of students, try and park their cars in the SCAD facilities. It's still being parked in accordance with the Newso parking requirements for a dormitory use at this location. The other point I want to bring up, since I've been hearing some back and forth about it, to my knowledge, the prior GDP that was approved by City Council, what we're talking about on the side of the canal by way of access and walkways was on the city side of the property. The private developer side of the property, that was an emergency access easement for fire and for service. It was a garbage entrance that was going to be located along the canal on the private property. Any of the canal beautification and walkways was going to be on the city side of that. And so the proposal today is not eliminating any sort of public benefit walkway along the canal. To my knowledge, and I was trying to pull up the prior GDP during this hearing, the easement that was going to run the length of the canal on WEDP's property was for service, stormwater maintenance, and fire suppression. It was not an easement to the public for use as a walkway.
I lost my train of thought now. There was one more point I wanted to make. Go ahead.
Me? Okay. In my understanding from the Canal District plan that there should also be a meeting with the Neighborhood Advisory Council. Is that... Am I understanding that correctly?
No, ma'am. I'm not aware of any such requirement. This was a master plan amendment, and so the notice and meetings, everything that SCAD did was above and beyond the requirements of the ordinance in terms of neighborhood outreach. For a general development plan amendment, those requirements aren't typically in play for such an ordinance. So anything that SCAD did by way of outreach in the neighborhood was simply above and beyond what's required under the ordinance.
All right. The last question that I had was about the buses. I'm a resident that uses Barnard quite a bit up by the facilities there, and the buses they've created quite a congestion problem where the Senior Citizen Center is. The buses, there are too many buses. They double park, and it is a hazard for... Yeah, drivers.
Ma'am, I'd be happy to reach out to you and work through any issues that you're having with that.
Oh, I'm not concerned so much about that as I am about this new facility and the fact that we're likely to have issues there. If we have issues at one, it seems like we may have issues at the other. Is there anything that is controlling these buses so that you don't have four or five or six buses trying to pull into the same four or five bus space?
They're on a time schedule, and that's tracked throughout the day to prevent that type of thing. And with this being such a busy area, there would not be an opportunity for them to stack up.
My hope would there would not be an opportunity for
yes,
them
ma'am.
To stack.
And I think also just in addition to that, we are providing pull-offs off of Lewisville Road mm-hmm. to allow for
I that. Understand, and there are pull-offs on Barnard as well. Thank you.
To Ms. Jarrett's point regarding the buses, it's kind of a good segue because I am very familiar with the foot traffic and you can't safeguard everything, but I am very aware and knowledgeable of the absent-mindedness of seeing the bus trying to get to class and darting out in the street. There is quite a bit when we're talking connectivity and foot traffic. And you said there's reduced parking, so it's not going to be a lot of driving. So therefore, if it's not a lot of driving, there's likely to be a lot of bicycles and a lot of foot traffic. That's a major concern for me because there are quite a few blind spots at that intersection leading up to, and it's not particularly right directly in front of the development, but the intersection of Boundary and Louisville could get quite problematic very quickly for those traveling by foot. So to a lot of the points already raised, I'm really concerned about the connectivity and the safety of not only the surplus of students. There's going to be quite a few students crossing those intersections. I'm very concerned about that. But, you know, there will also be some level of bottlenecks vehicularly because of the foot traffic. It may not necessarily be the students' traffic, but I can absolutely see a bottlenecking of vehicular traffic right there in that area as well. So I guess the point for raising that is, are there ways to essentially relieve that intersection of some of the foot traffic as well? I'm not asking for the world, but I do in the interest of the public good and the safety of the students, quite frankly. Just curious to see what types of ideas are being considered for the students traversing Boundary Street to get to, you know, the Hive for lunch and such.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we've been, like I mentioned earlier, we've been coordinating, and Brad mentioned as well, there are improvements. The city has been considering improvements to the Boundary Street and Louisville Road intersection. Those improvements include things such as, basically including a traffic circle that is going to provide that type of traffic circle. Does provide more kind of refuge areas for pedestrians. In addition, it also is going to provide for more kind of laminar flow of traffic through that, so you don't have as many backups concentration of traffic in certain parts of the day. It allows it to kind of flow a little more smoothly. And like I said, with the roundabout, you do have more kind of refuge areas to allow for that kind of safely crossing.
Okay. Thank you. With those improvements, I know neither the city can't force you guys to move at a certain time, nor can you make the city move at a certain time. So I'm thinking that and assuming that there would necessarily need to be some level of coordination to hopefully have those types of improvements happen simultaneously, or those improvements happen concurrently to mitigate the issue and concern that I'm raising, and just wondering if there would be any type of collaboration with the city to try to run those things concurrently.
Yes, certainly. So we're working with the city as it relates to the time schedule for our development. We think 2025 is the soonest that we would open, and we understand that that's roughly about the same time as the improvements that they're making in the area. So I think you'll likely see all of this happen around the same time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Melder.
The city's being invoked a lot, so I figured I'd speak up. This doesn't necessarily relate to this development or any specific development, but of course we have a complete streets ordinance that whether it be SCAD or whether it was the previous developer, all of that connectivity that's a part of the development or the rights of way that touch that development have to be improved by the developer in terms of the complete street ordinance. So you will see that improvement no matter who the developer of the property is because of the ordinance. Unrelated to this development, there are several projects and different phases of underwayness along the Louisville corridor. Petitioners mentioned a roundabout that has been designed and planned. There's also some planned improvements closer into the Woodville neighborhoods, and of course Stiles Avenue Phase 2, which is an impact fee program. And then additionally, I know some of you are aware of some information that the Georgia Ports put out last week about some planned improvements mm-hmm. about their egress in and out of Ocean City Terminal that would eliminate a lot of the truck traffic moving on Lewisville as well. So just giving some information about those planned improvements along Lewisville.
Much appreciated. Thank you. We're going to get out of the we'll take these last two questions or comments for the petitioner, and then we'll get out of this and go into the public.
Very quickly, as part of the complete streets, is bike lanes included? Are bike lanes included?
Yeah, I think, yes, as far as the complete streets, bike lanes are considered as part of that.
So y'all will be building that?
I'm not sure whether we'll be building it or not, but we believe that's part of the plan.
The developer wouldn't have to build a bike lane on the city, on Lewisville Road. Bike lanes would be in the purview of the city. I think there's opportunities in the development agreement, just like the city had with the prior developer, to ensure that there's a cost sharing in this initiative with the stormwater improvements and the canal widening that has to be done along the canal, as well as participation in how the public accesses that canal. I think most people are familiar with the what's kind of termed the canal district plan, which shows some connectivity along the south side of the canal that reaches the arena and reaches neighborhoods west of Stiles and connects to Lewisville Road. So all of those plans are, still active and viable. And with the $17 million now included in the hotel motel tax increase specific for those kind of connectivities, we may be able to see faster work on those projects.
Thank you. We'll take Ms. Epstein, and we'll take you, Mr. Irvin, and then we'll go into public. Ms. Epstein.
I have a question about the on-street parallel parking. That's to serve y'all's purposes, right? And that's is that included in your traffic count? I mean, your parking space count?
The on-street parking is not included in that count.
Those are public spaces.
Those are public spaces, not included in the count. All the required parking
is on your side. How do you envision those working with bus traffic and drop off?
So I think the plan that is up is maybe an older version. Right now, there are two sets of parallel parking spaces on there. The one set of parallel parking spaces is closer to the bridge, the canal. Would be actually those would be used for the bus drop-off. Yeah, as opposed to bus
trains. And then I do have just a passing comment for our SCAD representative that it would be the walkway along the canal. I personally would rather walk along the canal than along Lewisville Road, and certainly that would be an amenity for your students as well. And so to the extent that as participating in that planning and making sure that it would be great for your kids. It would be obviously fabulous for the community to have you all participate in that, even if it isn't on your property.
Okay.
Understood. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr.
Thank you. I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, and the city manager brought up something that I omitted. The Port Authority and those huge trucks that's on that roadway. And again, I'm going back to my concern about increased traffic. As well as I know there have been times I've traveled Louisville Road to Boundary, it's been backed up. Again, I'm going back to, I don't know exactly the parameters of the widening of the road, but I am concerned deeply about safety for all citizens, including SCAD students. I will say that, and I will yield the floor.
If I may, may I respond, Mr. Urban? Every aspect of this project we view as an improvement to the area from the currently approved plans. WEDP fund has plans that are approved. If a developer want to go out right now by right and act upon those plans, they could go ahead and put in that 300-unit multifamily apartment, which is clearly going to have impacts on traffic, clearly going to have impacts on Lewisville Road. We believe, however, that the project that we are presenting today, with the inclusion of the additional parking, with the inclusion of the bike routes, with all the resources that SCAD can offer for this property, is actually a great benefit to the site over what could be done today. And so we know that there's going to be issues with the development. Every development, whether it is this dormitory or any project to go on the site, is obviously going to have traffic impact. We believe that the proposal today has the least amount of traffic impact possible to provide housing for residents in the community. And so we are excited about this proposal because it actually improves the conditions from those that exist today.
While I concede that this is a project and someone else could put it there, my concerns for safety still remains, as well as I'm hearing from my fellow members of the board, the inability of those people to be able to traverse that area. And I don't know whether or not SCAD can remove the fencing or whatever to allow for persons to walk along the canal. That was something, again, I said earlier, that we as a board were quite happy to see that connectivity.
Yes.
For citizens, as opposed to walking down Louisville Road. Because part of the purpose, as I understood the canal district, was to create that connectivity between downtown. And that was part of what we wanted to see. So I'll close out with that.
Thank you, Mr. Urban. Anything further? Okay. Thank you all. We'll entertain public comment. We'll first take the individual that is online. That is Anthony Maxwell. If you would, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes to submit your comment.
Yes, my name is Anthony Maxwell. I'm with the Yamacraw Restoration Project, and from my understanding, we didn't receive, as well as First Bryan, we did not receive any information about the public meetings about this particular project. And we're concerned as well about the impact it's going to have on the community, Brickyard, Carver Village, Cloverdale. And we just haven't seen this type of response coming back from SCAD or any city developers about what the community thinks about what's going on, and what we want to be a part of. And so we're still concerned about that.
All right, thank you. We'll now move on to the next speaker, Ryan Jarls.
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Jarls. I'm Director of Preservation with Historic Savannah Foundation. I just want to precursor my comments by stating I will focus mainly on the historic structure that's involved on this site. I'll leave commentary for traffic engineering and other questions like that for other people. Previously, in 2019, you may remember HSF performed a heart bombing of this structure, which is just to bring attention to historic structures that may be in peril or may be demolished at some point. Since then, we've seen a lot of proposals for either full demolition, relocation of this building, all sorts of strange and otherworldly ideas. At one point, the previous petitioner said he might move it over to the berm, But since this petitioner has come forward, we see the head house staying in its current location, and we do see, unfortunately, a loss of the sheds at the rear. But with the head house staying in its current location and with the rehabilitation of that structure, although not the greatest situation, we are accepting of that fact, and we are supportive of that fact. And so that's our main comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jarls. Okay, next public speaker, Ms. Portia Irwin. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes to submit your comment.
Good afternoon. My name is Portia Irwin. In listening to the debate and discussion on the particular project, my concerns are still that of yours. And I'm more so in doubt of the roundabout than for the roundabout, being that the traffic, as Mr. Irvin has already stated, is very backed up currently between Boundary and Louisville Road. And just another thought that crossed my mind while the young men were speaking. In his last statement, he said that this was by far the best project presented out of all over the last couple of years for this particular parcel of land for the community. How so? Whomever, during the entire debate, I'm like, this is a project that is for housing for SCAD, not for the entire community, or will this be, is this planned to be a mixed development where particular ratios of public housing is allowed to commingle with SCAD? So I just wanted a point of clarity on that as well. Lastly, is this project to increase the already population of SCAD, or are we looking to increase SCAD's population and then in turn, being that it's tax exempt and not taxable, how does that again help the revenue of the city and the citizens?
Thank you, Ms. Irwin. Next we'll have Ms. Ellie Isaacs.
Thank you. My name is Ellie Isaacs. I am technically chair of the Historic District Board of Review, but I'm not here in that capacity today. I'm here today as a preservation advocate. Just wanted to put that out there for clarification. So, I just wanted to bounce off something that's already been said. It's just because something is labeled as an improvement does not mean that it is one. There are many concerns that I have about this site. I don't think that the proposed development is appropriate at 7 stories tall with the surrounding development. I have concerns about the roundabout and the diversion of the canal that has been talked about but not been presented to the public because transparency is always the best. And I think that those implications, especially as everything that you guys have talked about is relation to public traffic, is very vital for the use of this site. And then I also wanted to support the keeping of the head house, even though I wish it was the entire building. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Mr. LaRay Benton, please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes to submit your comments, sir.
All right. LaRay Benton. I'm a PhD nuclear physicist and a trained federal inspector and investigator. So I'm speaking on this from a federal perspective. One, the entirety of the Ogeechee Canal is actually on the federal register. So all development along the Ogeechee Canal, one, you need to actually get a wetlands determination from the Army Corps of Engineers. That is absent within the staff's recommendation or anything that the presenter has presented. Also, there needs to be a section, a 36 CFR Part 800, Section 106 review, historical review done on the canal. Being that the Ogeechee Canal sits on the Federal Register, any development along the Ogeechee Canal, you're supposed to do a Section 106 review. The MPC knows that because you're doing it for Yamacraw Village, which HUD required, right? The canal also falls up under the Department of Interior and the National Park Service, right? There's nothing in the staff report or from the presenter that showed any coordination with any of the federal agencies, right, that the Ogeechee Canal affects, right? For example, FEMA, right? You're talking about the widening of the canal. So when you're widening the canal, you're going to increase the flow of the canal going downstream. You got Yamacraw Village and First Bryan Baptist Church, which I'm a member of, that is downstream. And again, they didn't reach out to no one in Yamacraw Village. They didn't reach out to no one in the church to actually discuss it, because if you widen the actual canal and you increase water flow, that affects FEMA, right? The FEMA, that in turn affects the property value in terms of the insurance rates, all right, for the property owners downstream of the canal. That hasn't been done, right? And that's a federal requirement. Also, when you talk about the EPA, the canal is a wetlands, right? It flows right into the Savannah River. So now we're actually talking about the Clean Water Act, right? The Clean Water Act is that's covered by not only EPA, FEMA, the Department of Interior, but also the Army Corps of Engineers. All right, the Army Corps of Engineers is right downstairs. All right, I mean, well, right around the corner. Right. Again, there has been no jurisdictional determination letter or anything from the Army Corps of Engineers, right, explaining that. Right. Lastly, right, there is no hydraulic analysis or water analysis to explain to the public how whatever effects or changes on the site is going to affect. You don't know until you do the analysis. Right. And that analysis is actually incumbent on SCAD, not the City of Savannah and not the Army Corps of Engineers. So Thomas and Hutton, they know that, right? None of that has been done. Neither has it been presented. Now, also, when we talk about...
You got 1 minute.
Cool.
I gave you a little bit extra time. You got 1 minute.
Okay, cool. Also, when we talk about the head house, right? The purpose of doing the Section 106 analysis is to actually identify likely buildings that could go on to the Federal Register, right? The head house is actually one of those that is actually eligible to not only go on the National Register, but also the Georgia Register and also the local registry, because it is an important structure in regards to African Americans, right? And also to actually debunk his last statement about the previous approval. The previous approval can actually be appealed up to the U.S. District Court because it actually violates federal standards and federal laws. Because one thing in particular, a Section 106 review hasn't been done, and that's a federal requirement. That's not a state requirement, and you cannot just walk over that and miss that. So I'm asking the NPC to actually require them to actually do that before you even vote on that, because it wasn't done. So from that standpoint, both the staff analysis is inadequate, and Thomas and Hutton's and SCAD's analysis is actually inadequate in regards to this site. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Mr. Benton, you can I just clarify, are you here on behalf of the federal government?
No, I'm actually here on behalf of First Bryan Baptist Church.
Thank you.
Just to clarify.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
All right. Oh, we got one more, Mr. Yellen. Ms. Gloria Williams. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Gloria Williams, president of the Kyler Brownville Neighborhood Association. In the initial presentation, the gentleman indicated that this would be beneficial to the Brickyard community as well as Kyler Brownville. I want to say that we never received any type of notification about a public meeting, so we are not aware of how it would be beneficial or what have you. I just want to make sure that that's on the record. We were not aware of any public inviting Kyler Brownville. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Williams, I would venture to say that may have been a misspoken statement, because I don't even see how it would be beneficial to Kyler Brownville, being that it is not even remotely close to it. So I just wanted to raise that point and just let you know, like, it may have been a misstatement or some misplaced wording, but I don't want to speak for the petitioner. They'll get the opportunity to respond. But that would be my assumption.
Well, I want to say this also then. We do have residents in the Kyler Brownville neighborhood who attends church on Lewisville Road. So maybe that would have some.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That concludes the public comment. No further public comment will be received. And I know you may or may not like the responses to some of the public comment. But I'm still going to ask that you keep the groans and grunts, the potential groans and grunts and moans and such, to a minimum. Mr. Yellen, you have the floor.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I may just respond to some of the public comment. I know that there was a lot to deal with, from the roundabout, which is a city project, to the height of our building, which is in compliance with the zoning ordinance, to federal government requirements, which don't, in fact, apply to this development. We are asking for an amendment to a general development plan. We have not gone through the site plan review process. This is the first step of the process. It's an amendment to the GDP. As it relates to the historic review, the SHPA requirements, I have 36 CFR 800 with me, which is the requirement that Mr. Benton alluded to. Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act requires federal agencies to take into account the effects of their undertakings. While this may have applied to Yamacraw Village, which is a HUD project, it does not apply to a project on private property that is not receiving federal dollars. Absolutely does not apply. This is for federal agencies to go through the process of compliance, not for private property owners to go through the process of compliance. As it relates to the jurisdictional determination, that's a process by which a developer or property owner would determine where the navigable waters of the United States exist. We know where the waters exist. We know where the canal exists. If we were going to abridge the canal, if we, the applicant, were going to modify the canal, which we are not, we would go through that JD process, and we would also go through the discharge process if we were going to put stormwater into the canal. Currently, the canal improvements are going to be undertaken by the City of Savannah, not by the Savannah College of Art and Design. And so the JD process and the stormwater discharge process are not applicable at this time. It's not to say that projects might have to go through that process as they come forward along the canal, but right now for this project is not the time and place for them. I think it's equally as important that there is a section in 36 CFR 800.1 as to timing for agency actions. And this specifically says the agency official, obviously not SCAD, must complete the Section 106 process prior to the approval of an expenditure of any federal funds for the undertaking or prior to the issuance of any license. This does not prohibit a federal agency from conducting or authorizing non-destructive project planning activities before completing compliance. We are fully in compliance with the federal requirements for this project, both from the historic side and from the Clean Water Act side. And we just felt like it was important to respond to that because they do not apply to this site.
Thank you, Mr. Yeller. So we'll now entertain a motion. If there is no board discussion, I should say, Mr. Noah.
I just want to weigh in on the Waterway Walkway. I was here. We were sold on that, or I was. That was one of the big items. Looking on the city website, the Savannah Canal District Master Plan dated August 15th of 2020, it shows a public, what appears to be a public walkway along the canal. And I just don't know where that got lost over the last couple of years. But
can I answer that question?
I would
believe
love
to. I'm not looking at the map. I wasn't here in 2020, but according to my review of the project, the public access is along the south border of the canal, which is city owned right of way. And for even the last, and I believe it was said already, the last development that I think this board and members who were here, who were sold on that, the northern end of the portion was for canal maintenance only and not public access. So the public access along the canal is planned. It's just not a part of this project. So I do want to be fair to this petitioner or to any other. I believe that my understanding is accurate, but I'm willing to be corrected by staff or by anyone else who was here and remember it. But the planned public access, the road is along that south border of the canal and would work over toward the arena and the parking lot and the bridge that spans the canal there.
Thank you, Mr. Melder. Any further discussion? Mr. Notrika.
Yes, thank you. You know, when the city decided to put the arena over on Stiles Avenue, I really didn't understand that location. And now today that it's built, I understand and I love the arena over there. While we've addressed sort of the micro issues with this project, I'd also like to talk about the macro issue. You know, this project is almost equidistant between downtown and the arena. I don't know if any of you have ever walked from MLK to the arena. I have. It's not a very pleasant walk. I view this project as the start of making that entire corridor amazing and walkable because we need to have connection between downtown and the arena. So I understand the micro issues, but I think we need to also look at the big picture. This could be a huge shot in the arm to what you discussed earlier, connectivity. We need to be able to have people walking and riding their bikes from downtown all the way to the arena. Right now we don't have it. And with the investment from private putting in sidewalks in their portion, the city putting in other portions, we will get there one day. And this will be an amazing walk from the arena all the way back to downtown.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Bowles.
I just want to make a comment with regard to that. I think most of the conversation that we've heard is not about the traffic from downtown to the arena, not even downtown to the site. There is more of a neighborhood or more city residents of the city of Savannah that live beyond that, on the west side of the arena, on the south side of the arena, not just the northeast portion of the city of Savannah. So we are more concerned about the impact on the residents than we are on those who are visiting, those who are here only coming for a concert. We're concerned about people who travel Louisville Road every day to get to and from work. That's an important part of what we're discussing here today.
Thank you. If there's no more board discussion, Ms. Bowles.
I forgot to mention, I was going to say something else before that. I was a part of some public meetings regarding a park that's going to be at the arena site, which I imagine was going to be open to the public. And it almost looks like it's in the same space. So I'm a little bit confused about how you're going to access the park without coming onto SCAD private property. But
this property was, just to clarify, this property was never owned by the city, at least not very recently at all. And I believe the wetlands park that you're referring to sits further south and to the west than this property. And the picture that I think has appeared on our screen, I believe is from the prior project, the Gateway project that did not move forward. And as you can see there, if you look at the bottom of the graphic, now this has, you know, canal boats and kayaks, which, you know, are not going to be part of our stormwater system. But you do see a public access on the south side of the canal there, and that's along city right-of-way. And you see the development has frontage along the north side of the north side of the canal, but it's not public access, right? So the public access portion or the connectivity that would, you know, move north to Louisville Road and along the south side of the canal and back down towards the canal district and to western communities, south and west, lies along, what here would be the south side, south bank of the canal.
Thank you, Mr. Melda. Okay. I think we've run through this quite a bit, and for the sake of time, we need to move on with the agenda. With that being said, we'll close the board discussion and we'll entertain a motion. Would you all please put the recommendation back up on the screen?
To get things moving, Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Our motion is on the floor made by Mr. Melder and seconded by Mr. Notrika. If there's no discussion on that motion, we'll enter a vote. 1 second, please. We'll start at the bottom this time. Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
No.
Mr. Irvin?
No.
Ms. Epstein?
No.
Ms. Bowles? Ms. Amick?
No.
So that leaves it on me. Huh? Let me just double check the count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We got one. What's that? No. hearing the concerns and such, I am leaning to the no. I'm going to go no on this one, because I do think there are some concerns and some issues that can be addressed. So that motion fails. Do we have a new motion? Was that? No, excuse me. I apologize. That's my error. That is my error. No new motion is needed. So the motion fails and the petition is not approved. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, that is a text amendment, zoning ordinance, Article 7, 16, I mean, Section 13, 1 through 6, Hotel Development Overlay District. What we're going to do is, because the conversation regarding this item will likely cross over into the next item on the agenda quite frequently for clarity, we're going to hear both item number five and six together, but we will be voting on it separately just so everyone understands. And also, I want to take a moment of executive privilege. I know that quite the bulk of the individuals here as representative of the public is specifically for these items. There has been a lot of conversation, as you all know, regarding this petition. I don't address rumor, but I do want to dispel misinformation. So with that being said, I would like to extend to the public what exactly an overlay district is, what the intent of the overlay district is in this instance, and then we'll hear the petition and carry out what we will carry out the actions necessary for this. So a zoning overlay or district superimposes an additional set of regulations over an existing zoning district or multiple zoning districts. Again, that is, it superimposes an additional set of regulations over an existing zoning district or multiple zoning districts. So essentially, it just adds an additional layer of regulations, rules that must be adhered to. In this particular instance, to dispel some of the things that have been heard publicly, again, it's not rumor. This is just to make sure that the community is an educated community so that you can make the best decisions in what the way you support and or oppose things that's happening around you. The intent here is to add protections from certain things diminishing the public good within your areas. The intent is to protect. So please be mindful of that. Lead with that. And we'll now hear the presentation by Mr. Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that explanation. The present request, as you stated, is a request to amend Article 7, Section 7.13 of the Savannah Zoning Ordinance, which is the Hotel Development Overlay District. And in particular, the petitioner here is requesting to extend the application of this zoning district to cover the Victorian Historic Overlay District in the Streetcar Historic Overlay District. In the first petition ending in 2724-CA, the text that has been provided goes through each of the sections of 7.13, and it adds language that includes both the Victorian Historic District and the Streetcar Historic District. First into the purpose, second into clarifying its relationship to the zoning district, which is to add this additional requirement. It goes on to add the specific district boundaries, the boundaries of particular streets, and then finally to make reference to the contributing resources map to ensure that all of the particular buildings within those districts are included. So the specific text amendments are aimed at including the Victorian Historic District and the Streetcar Historic District. But this is an addition to an existing ordinance provision. To give you a little bit of background on this specific overlay, the Hotel Development Overlay District was adopted as a feature of NUZO for the purpose of directing hotel development to areas where it is appropriate. Hotels, as defined within the scope of the overlay, take two different forms. You have large hotels, which are 75 guest rooms or more, and then small hotels are 16 to 74 guest rooms. So in essence, these are large footprint structures that are going to require a significant off-street parking requirement, and they're also going to generate a high number of vehicular trips. So this is aiming this development in places where it is most suited to go. That is accompanied by a map that we will discuss in the following petition. So the request is to both add the language addressing the Victorian District and the Streetcar District, and to amend the associated map showing the specific areas of downtown where we would like to protect the historic nature and historic character, in order to sort of limit or control where it is that we're going to place hotels. The hotel overlay uses two different mechanisms. First, it uses a color coding for a territory within the jurisdiction in order to identify land area where hotel development is appropriate. And then it also uses red highlighting of thoroughfares. So the two colors for color coding are there is green, which means that large hotels are appropriate, and then there is yellow, which means that small hotels are appropriate. There's a third color, pink, which says that no hotels are allowed. Joined with that is this red highlighting of particular thoroughfares, and these particular thoroughfares, as spelled out in the ordinance, are those that are classified as either arterials or they are collectors, and these are thoroughfares that have the ability to handle more traffic, in essence. So these two particular mechanisms indicate where it is that hotels are appropriate, both from a parcel fabric sort of a standpoint, as well as from thoroughfares that are able to handle their traffic generation. The particular associated map submission that we're going to talk about next actually indicates the entire area as pink, which would indicate that no new hotels are proposed to be developed within the boundaries. And it also does not identify any particular thoroughfares, stating that there is no right of way that is identified as being appropriate for hotel development, just to be clear. So in essence, the effect of the requested amendment to the zoning ordinance is actually to prohibit any new hotel development until a request to amend the text of the ordinance would come back before this board and the Savannah City Council. That would be the effect of the current request if it were approved today. The ordinance provides in section 3.7.7 four evaluation criterion that the board should use in determining the appropriateness of a requested text amendment. The first one is consistency. And so it in essence asks, what is the extent to which the proposed text amendment is consistent with the remainder of the zoning ordinance, including the purpose and intent? Staff found that there is a potential conflict in the extension of this provision without using those two mechanisms, in essence, to identify some territory within the jurisdiction that would be appropriate, and also to identify those thoroughfares. And we did a cursory analysis just to kind of see what that might look like, and I'll point to some of that in just a moment. But the purpose of the overlay, in essence, was to guide development, not necessarily to strictly prohibit. In this case, it's being used as a means to prohibit development. And so staff found conflict with that. The second ordinance criterion is new or changing circumstances. And so what the ordinance is asking is, does this represent some sort of a revision that has been necessitated by changing circumstances? And so in essence, staff found that this does represent an effort to sort of respond to the volatile real estate market that we're seeing right now. What's happening is that the petitioners want to basically provide some sort of a quick mechanism in order to stop development, in order to allow some time, in essence, so that we're not constantly reacting to new developments. And so staff takes the view that this is in an effort to, in essence, respond to the volatile real estate market. The third criterion is an error or an inappropriate standard. And is this an effort to revise or otherwise improve upon an existing requirement or standard? Staff did not find that there was any ordinance provision that required correction. Actually, this seems to be somewhat of an unintended use of this particular mechanism, which in essence is sort of a moratorium. Finally, the ordinance prescribes a fourth criterion, which is compliance with higher law, and this is not a provision that would bring the zoning ordinance or any particular provision of the zoning ordinance into alignment with higher levels of law, state or federal. So, in essence, staff did find that there were some concerns, as this particular tool is typically associated with the extension of meeting some sort of goals that have been identified within a plan process. So we typically carry out a comprehensive plan process, a neighborhood plan process, like Ms. Bridget Liddy's office typically does. We would use a zoning overlay as a tool in order to achieve a particular desired aim. And so it was appropriately applied to the downtown historic district. The idea was that we are going to protect our historic character of development and not allow, you know, monstrous new buildings to come in and kind of overshadow those that are there, and also to sort of disrupt the character of development, the pattern, the street structure, the grid nature. And so it was employed for that purpose. And here we find that it is not employed to its original purpose. In turning kind of to the second portion, which is our map amendment, we identified the particular districts, zoning districts, that might potentially allow a hotel at present. And so we found that the TC1 and the TC2, the traditional commercial 1 and 2 districts, are the commercial districts that are presently within these districts that would permit someone to come forward to this board and to the city council requesting establishment of a hotel use. And so what we've done, actually, it would probably make sense for me to pull that up. Just one moment. I'm going to switch over to the other report. Extension boundary, let me go to staff report. Okay. And so what we did was we looked at where TC1 and TC2 zoning was within these districts. And actually, I realize I didn't point out the map. This is the map which shows the Victorian and streetcar districts that are now to be included in this language. This is the original downtown map. These particular areas showing green allow large hotels, and the red are your corridors or your thoroughfares where frontage is appropriate for siting a hotel. And so here are our additions right here. When we come down within those districts, what we did was to see the location of current business zoning, because obviously, as the chairman pointed out, we are affecting the zoning of all of these property owners. I believe there were 1,111, unique number, parcels that are within these two districts that would be affected. And so this would represent kind of the truncation of their rights, meaning if they were prepared to go sell their property to someone to move tomorrow, it would be of concern for them, because this is something they would lose the ability to do. And so in accordance with state zoning procedures law, we went ahead and we notified all of those people. And we also wanted to show it on the map. You can kind of see some clustering. We see there at corners. We see there at particular thoroughfares. And this is not inconsistent with what staff found in its cursory review of appropriate thoroughfares. But just to give you a view of the immediately affected properties if this particular provision were adopted. And so with these folks, they would have to come to you and request the special use, and then that would have to be approved at this level, and then it would move on to city council. What I can say is that establishments having 15 guest rooms or less are not within the scope of this ordinance, and so they are not subject to these provisions. But the ordinance in and of itself requires that these particular establishments, inns, they also have to be on a particular classification of thoroughfares. So even the smaller version of a hotel, you know, which is not termed a hotel within the ordinance definition, still has additional development requirements that are not within the context of this. It is a limited use in these current districts and cannot, you know, by virtue just be placed anywhere. So there's an additional threshold that even up to 15 guest rooms must be met prior to establishing an inn, which is short of a hotel. And so Here we have the district. You can see the properties that would be affected, and we did, in accordance with that, notify the property owners because we do not want to truncate their property rights without them knowing. This is akin to a zoning action. Finally, we were given a survey that was provided by the Thomas Square neighborhood. Thomas Square and Victorian were the two principal neighborhoods involved in this specific petition. They did poll residents. They did poll residents. I don't know the extent to which specific property owners who would be directly affected were consulted, but I know that meetings were held, and we have attached the results of their survey. And that is an attachment to the agenda.
Excuse me. How many public stakeholder meetings did you have with the 1,111 property owners that own the actual properties that are being affected by this versus the residents that just want to control everybody else's property?
Mr. Notrika, if we can hold out and let him finish his presentation, that would be greatly appreciated, and we'll allow him to answer that question. Mr. Morrow.
Sure. So, actually, it's a good point to answer the question. In accordance with Georgia's zoning procedures, we did notify all the property owners in advance of the hearing, which is being held today. Even if this were approved today, it would still need to be forwarded to the city council in order for this action to have any effect at all. So we treated this much like we would any rezoning and notified the property owners. There were no specific meetings that were held. They were not required, but moving on to our recommendation, staff actually does recommend that the present request is continued for the purpose of allowing additional notification so that we can hear from those who are directly impacted by this. But again, that additional requirement of time for notification would enable the type of meetings that Mr. Nutrika has just asked about. That concludes staff review.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Mr. Irvin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. I want to clarify a couple of points that you said, and I want to echo what the chairman said. This ordinance has been, or this text amendment has been, subject to a lot of rumor and innuendo. And to anyone that has spread those rumors, I would like to say if they're an elected official, they should be voted out. My concern is, with respect to protection of neighborhoods, your continuance would allow for, as you stated earlier, for more public involvement.
Microphone. Pull it a little closer. They can't hear you that well. Thank you.
I believe you stated that you wanted to have more public involvement. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you tell us how and what measures would you take to engage the public further?
MPC staff would be prepared to post any meetings that the board felt necessary. We are happy to do public education and meetings as the board deems appropriate.
And those public education meetings would be in various, as you said, as we tell you how to do about doing, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. With respect to the 1,100 letters that were sent out, I'm assuming you also spoke with, you sent those to neighborhood association presidents as well?
They were not directed to neighborhood association presidents.
And that would be part of why you would want the continuance in order to discuss this matter with them as well.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Irvin. Ms. Jarrett.
Yeah, I think Mr. Irvin hit on a lot of what I was thinking. If you were to do a hotel overlay right now, how much would be involved in determining the planning process for that? Obviously you'd have the public meetings, but wouldn't there be a little bit more involved than that?
Well, okay. So staff, has the ability to produce, visuals. So one of the first things that we did, we called our GIS team to, produce maps that show, the thoroughfares that had the appropriate classification currently. And then also we looked at the existing zoning within the districts. And so overlaying that information, that's the kind of stuff that we would give to, city leaders, that we would give to neighborhood groups, anyone who is interested. And, I believe that we could do a mini planning process, in essence, in order to kind of understand what is it that these neighborhoods are actually envisioning for their own development.
Are you aware of any planning process that took place as a part of this?
Planning processes, I would define it, no. I'm aware of some community meetings that took place, and there was notification among certain neighborhood associations that the petitioner in particular, I'm aware that Victorian and Thomas Square, there was outreach. I would not refer to that as a planning process.
Thank you.
Anything else for staff? All right. Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Before I call the petitioner, I want to break into there are quite a few people that want to speak on this petition. I'm a huge proponent of public participation. However, I would ask prior to the petitioner submitting their making their statement that you all start to try to trim the fat on some of what you have to bring forward. Because there is no possible way that we'll be able to get 5 to 10 minute speeches from everyone. It's just unreasonable. And I would like to respect everybody's time. And quite frankly, we have another meeting right behind this. But that's not your problem. Like, I appreciate you all showing up. I am a huge proponent of the public participation process. However, I would like to us to be very concise. So while the petitioner is making their statement, I ask that you start to summarize your things. And as public comment comes before you, I ask that if you hear what you were going to say, just hold out. Just let that be your piece as well, please. All right. Thank you. We'll hear the petitioner. Please state your name for the record. And you, sir, have 20 minutes.
Let me say real quick that it's my name on the petition, but this was a group project, and so I'm going to be letting Ryan Madsen speak first.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Planning Commission, I'm Ryan Madsen, former president of the Victorian Neighborhoods Association from 2018 through 2022, and currently the VNA appointee to the Tourism Advisory Council. And I would like to acknowledge the current president of the VNA, Nancy Mile, is in attendance here. I'd like to begin by stating that we, the petitioners, are not anti-hotel. We are pro-mixed use and pro-housing. We're not anti-tourist. We are pro-resident and pro-small business. We believe this extension of the hotel overlay is a crucial and timely policy action to prevent unwanted developments that would negatively and irreversibly impact the quality of life that we currently enjoy in our neighborhoods. Eliminating hotels as a use would also have a positive impact in keeping property within an affordable range while encouraging infill on large vacant properties, such as those that we saw in the TC1 and TC2 districts. The city had an opportunity 20 years ago, 10 years ago, to rezone large parcels in the downtown historic district to favor mixed-use infill and multifamily housing. Instead, we built hotels on those parcels. We allowed hotels on almost all of those large parcels. Today, we have reached a tipping point of over-tourism alongside a housing affordability crisis. Let us not repeat the same mistakes in our neighborhoods further south. Unlike housing, which brings new residents, hotels attract a steady stream of temporary visitors who do not feel a sense of ownership and responsibility for taking care of the neighborhood. Visitors are always welcome to explore our streetscapes and parks, to admire our historic buildings, and to shop in local businesses. However, visitors do not need lodgings in the neighborhood to enjoy these experiences. Tourists and visitors can easily visit using free DOT transportation or else take a stroll down Bull Street or any of our north-south streets. Moreover, there are numerous guided tours on foot, on trolley, on bicycle, which bring visitors into our area on a daily basis. Hotels do not exist in a real estate vacuum, of course. They're like apex predators of property and land use. The presence of a hotel has knock-on effects with surrounding properties. For example, in response to anticipated tourist spending, commercial rents in the area will gradually rise. Locally owned mom-and-pop businesses can no longer afford the rents, and tourist-oriented businesses and corporate chains like Starbucks and Wet Willie's will take their place. Beloved local businesses that cater to locals as well as tourists will eventually disappear. Residents who could shop, dine, and construct their business locally are pushed further and further from their neighborhoods to do the same. If a hotel developer believes that they can offer a hospitality product which would benefit the community as a whole, there is a fair and public process for rezoning to get a hotel approved with buy-in from residents and existing business owners. Therefore, the power to approve or deny a hotel would lie with citizens, not with hotel developers and lobbyists who otherwise have little or no vested interest in the neighborhood. The hotel overlay does not expressly forbid hotels in perpetuity. It would merely subject any proposal for a new hotel to rigorous and necessary public scrutiny. Because of the potential for hotels to irreversibly disrupt patterns of life and commerce, we as neighborhood leaders strongly favor this more structured and protective approach to permitting hotels. Alternately, promoting residential infill on large parcels will increase the number of residents who live in our neighborhoods who take care of the place and who patronize our local businesses. Housing, as opposed to hotels, will positively impact the vibrancy and sustainability of our neighborhoods and the city of Savannah as a whole. We urge the commissioners today to disregard MPC staff recommendations and vote on the side of residents and small business owners. Residents and businesses in the Victorian, Thomas Square, and Kyler Brownville neighborhoods have been duly informed following the city's procedures for public notification for rezoning. Local news media, including Savannah Morning News and segments on WJCL, WSAV, and WTOC, have covered the hotel overlay and clarified its intended purpose for the public. Each Saturday for the last month at the Forsyth Farmers Market, we have met with hundreds of residents and provided information about the hotel overlay. We're not going to reach out to 1,100 property owners and have private meetings. That's not our responsibility. We had meetings open to the public and invited everyone to come to our neighborhood meetings. In short, residents and small business owners overwhelmingly support this petition to extend the hotel overlay into our neighborhoods, to preserve and enhance our quality of life, and to ensure that we continue to have opportunities to conduct business locally without rapidly rising rents or competition from national chains. Thank you for your consideration. My co-petitioner, Mr. Jason Combs of Thomas Square, would like to share some additional comments.
All right, Mr. Combs, you got 14 minutes left.
Okay, I won't use it all.
All right.
Ryan has just told you why we, the three neighborhoods, think that this extension of the HDO is necessary right now and why you should vote in favor for it. Now, I'm going to give you five reasons to vote on it today, for or against, rather than continuing the issue. I'll start with the MPC report. First, the staff report says that street classifications were not taken into account. This is correct. Street classifications are only taken into account in the existing HDO where hotels are allowed. They are secondary and not a governing consideration. You'll notice no streets are highlighted in the pink area unless it abuts yellow or green. So, since we are only asking for pink area, we have no need to consider street conditions. It's a moot point. Moving on. Two, the staff report also recommends that the HDO should be amended to consider inns. The simple answer to this is no. This is an unnecessary complication of the issue. As Ryan said, we want to address the apex predator first. If necessary, we can address inns later in a separate proposal. The HDO is the hotel development overlay for a reason. It targets hotel development and nothing else. That's what we want to do, and that's why we are using this existing tool as is, changing only its geography, but not its intent. Number three, We have the opposition letter from the Savannah Chamber, the Downtown Business Association, the Economic Development Authority, and the Tourism Leadership Council. From now on, I'll just call them the Hotel Boosters because that's easier and it's accurate. This letter makes the argument that this extension of the hotel development overlay that we are asking for, that it should be treated just like the original creation of the HDO itself, that it's a huge task. No, this is very different what we are asking for. It is much simpler. In 2017, they were creating the HDO from scratch for a very complex area of Savannah that already contained over 50 hotels represented by the boosters who wrote this letter. The creation of the original HDO was like tailoring a three-piece suit. The green area is the jacket, the yellow is the waistcoat, and the pink is the trousers. We do not want to tailor a whole new suit. We just want to lengthen the trousers down to Victory Drive. Number four. I'd also like to point out that the Victorian and Thomas Square districts actually were included in the original hotel study that led to the hotel development overlay, though they ended up being left out of it, contrary to staff recommendation at the time. Small hotels were also at that time capped at 54 rooms, and that was later raised to 74 rooms, a pretty big change. So how were these very large changes and decisions made amidst the collaboration and inclusion repeatedly mentioned in the hotel booster letter? I'm about to tell you. A few weeks ago, I invited former Alderman Bill Durrance to come to the July 11th hearing before it was canceled due to lack of quorum. He declined, but he wrote me back a fairly long email detailing his part in crafting the hotel development overlay in 2017. I'll read you a bit of it, and I quote, "I was involved in the hotel overlay work, and as I remember it, Harold Yellen, Michael Owens, who's here today, and I were the ones who hashed out the final language and boundaries. It was a two-parter, defining small hotels, 16 to 75 rooms, and large hotels, 75-plus rooms, and then defining the boundaries where each would be allowed. At that final stage, the three of us were trying to get something done right then for the most important area, the Landmark District. I don't remember if any of the Victorian is included in the current overlay, but if we had any discussion about Thomas Square, it would have just been to acknowledge that the issue would eventually have to be addressed there, as we are doing now." So the point I'm trying to make here is not that anything nefarious was happening in the small group of three men. I just want to point out that it was a small working group of three men that really created the downtown hotel development overlay. That's it. Three smart men, and I know them all. But a complex process of collaboration and inclusion as described in this letter, that is a farce. Maybe it looked that way from the outside, but really it was a small working group of three guys. So in the end, this letter is really just a well-worded temper tantrum from the hotel boosters, upset they were not invited to participate in our process. But I will say it again. We have no hotels currently. We want no hotels, so we need no hotel boosters involved in our process. We are like a homeowner trying to secure their home against intruders. When you're securing your home against intruders, you don't go and negotiate with the potential intruders, do you? No, you just keep them out. You don't need to talk to them. Number five. So that's four reasons to vote today and not continue in case you weren't keeping track, and I'm going to revisit them. Number one, street conditions are moot. Number two, inns and other uses can be addressed separately. Number three, what we are asking for is simple and does not require reinventing the wheel. Number four, our process has been just as legitimate as the process that created the HDO, and probably more so. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, you should vote on this proposal today because continuing it will have no practical purpose. There is no alteration or compromise position that we wish to consider. We, representing our residents in three of the most densely populated residential neighborhoods of Savannah and our small business owners of these three neighborhoods, we initiated this process. And the proposal before you is exactly the proposal we want to see considered and voted on. This is what we want and nothing less, and all the proper steps have been followed. Please vote in favor, but most importantly, please vote today. And later today, please vote in favor of Kyler Brownville to join us. And I have two extra notes because of comments earlier. First of all, it was called on to continue this for extra notification of absentee landlords. I mean, we met the proper legal notification. We're giving extra consideration to absentee landlords. I don't think that's fair. They were given proper notification. If they wanted to be here or submit a letter, they could do so. I've seen plenty of people at public meetings told they missed their chance and they were notified and things moved on, saying this should be no different for these owners of these properties. Second of all, Mr. Morrow was asked if this was studied, if there's a planning process. And again, I think there was because our neighborhoods were considered in 2017, though they were left out. So it was considered. You can go back and look at that staff recommendation that actually wanted our neighborhoods included in the hotel development overlay. So in a way, we are correcting not an error, but an omission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Combs. Any questions for the petitioner? All right. We'll go into public comment. Before I get all the way into public comment, I have a few here that have not marked whether they are in favor or opposed, and I want to try to consolidate the positions. So not to put you on the spot, however, I would like to know where you stand. Clara Gregg, opposed or in favor? Okay. Mr. Charles, opposed? I mean, in favor? All right, cool. Ms. Earlene Davis. Okay. And then I can't make out this last name, but it looks like a Bill Chandler. Well, I can't make out the last name. It's not legible. Okay. with first name, Clara Gregg. That was it. Okay. Thank you. So what I'll do real quick, just so the board has a quick, can kind of see where people stand. All those in favor of the petition, of approving this, please raise your hand. Okay. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise your hand. All right. Thank you. Okay. So again, for the sake of time, we're going to trim a minute off. So hopefully you have had the opportunity to consolidate your comments. We have to keep the meeting moving, but I do want to afford everybody the opportunity to submit and participate in the public process. So, we'll go first with those that are opposed. Jim Hudstrucker. Oh, okay. Is marked differently on here. Sorry about that. But you have the opportunity to submit comment if that is indeed what you would like to do. Is this speaker card? You don't have to. You're not required. Oh, yes. Excuse me. That's my error. So those in favor of the continuance. Yeah, that's basically staff's recommendation. Scratch that. I'm just going to stay down the path that I have already charted. And that is, if you are in favor of the overlay, they've already raised their hands. If you are opposed of the overlay, and so everything remains the same as the way you all represent it. I apologize for that, Ms. Okay. So, do you wish to?
Go for it.
Again, you don't have to.
Like a new experience.
Please state your name for the record. You got 2 minutes.
Very good. My name is James Hunschrecker. I am the president of the Forsyth Park Community Alliance, and I am giving my support to the passing of the hotel overlays. I have lived next to a 125-room hotel for 20 years. From my experience, I see the need to protect neighborhoods from such hotels. The safeguard residents think might be in place to protect historical standards and Savannah's historic appeal are easily erased through the city's processes. I won't go through that list. The residents of Savannah are telling you to stop hotels. I see the mandate originates from the negative impacts the hotel boom in historic Savannah has had on residents. Savannah is more valuable to the residents who want to build a community. That's pretty much it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to, since he was up in favor, we'll go ahead and stay down that path. Mr. Ryan Jarles.
Hello again. My name is Ryan Jarles, Director of Preservation with Historic Savannah Foundation. I guess we were also confused by your question.
Yeah, my apologies.
We would prefer an item like this to be continued, and the sole purpose for me stating that is that we would like to see more cohesion between the three neighborhoods who are submitting essentially the same thing, yet they are separated. So our one comment would be that we would like to see more cohesion, more conversation between all three neighborhoods moving forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Ellie Isaacs.
Hello again. As I stated previously, my name is Ellie Isaacs. I am chair of Historic District Board of Review, but I'm not here in that capacity today. I'm here as a preservation advocate. I just wanted to express my support for this as it is presented today. I feel that we've seen how the hotels have affected the landmark district, which is now, as everybody knows, in threatened status. So I would hate to see that in the future this sort of development happens in the districts where people actually live and can afford to live. And I would actually, in the future, I think that there needs to be a whole review of the entire overlay district as it relates to the landmark district as well. But obviously, that's a separate topic. So I just wanted to express my support for this as it's being presented today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ture.
So good afternoon to you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
State your name for the record, please.
I'm about to do that.
Gotcha.
For the sure. I am Dr. Amir Jamal Ture. I'm an activist, a human rights activist, and also involved in this system that we call a plantocracy that is tourism here in Chatham County. And I'm one of the people that expressed some thoughts that go back some 30 years. Reverend Dr. Benny R. Mitchell and I stand on the corners of Gwinnett and MLK Jr. Boulevard, and we discussed the issues that we saw in the 1990s. And then also being experienced with regards to traveling throughout this entire area from St. Augustine to Jacksonville, North Carolina, that I had saw that people now have what they call cultural overlay protection districts. And knowing that I advocated for that some 20 years ago, and I put that out there. Then in addition, with regards to this, I have been advocating and saying that we need to have the conservation districts expanded to the neighborhoods such as Fowler Park, Cam Park, Jackson Park, the Benjamin Van Clark neighborhood. Because we see the protections for those neighborhoods such as Ardmore, Parkside, and Osley Park. And what I have said to folks, and I'm just making a statement, I am in support of the hotel overlay because I understand it's about some vestige of protection for our communities. But we need to have protection because the black community here and those of us who have been speaking about this have been the bellwether for this right now. Yes. As I heard folks go and say that you're being reactive, yes, you're being reactive. Because when we spoke about this 30 years ago, 20 years ago, you ignored us and I shared to other groups of people that you thought that we were only speaking about a black issue. No, this is a community issue. But you tend to think that because we are marginalized that what we say is not valid and not important. So yes, I think that you all must go and have a further conversation with the neighborhoods that are part of the fringes, that we're not the Victorian district and we are not the streetcar district, but you still need to talk to, again, Cam Park, Jackson Park.
I'm about to roll it on up. So yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm not using this as an opportunity because we have said to elected officials and members of boards that you need to come to our communities and share the information. You're not sharing it with us, but then you go and some of y'all sit together and you have your own private conversations like it's something brand new when we talked about this 30 years ago. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Gary Guthrie. I believe, and let me know if I got it wrong. Please, no, thank you. Please state your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
My name is Gary Guthrie. I live in the Victorian District, and basically everything that Ryan Mattson said, I agree with, and more. He said, we have a residential area. We want to keep it as residential as possible, and large hotels do not add to the residential area that we're trying to keep. And also the mom and pop businesses, I think, will be negatively influenced by large hotels and other chain restaurants. So I'm hoping that you do vote today to make this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Brad Clement. Brad Clement. Okay. Barry Atwood. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Barry Atwood, and I am a resident and a citizen of Savannah, resident of the Thomas Square neighborhood on 37th Street. I should also state that I am on the board for the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association, but I'm really speaking on behalf of myself as a property owner. I do support this overlay extension. I really hope that you will vote today for it. I think everyone's saying pretty much the same thing. We are trying to preserve our neighborhood. And we have taken the proactive steps because believe me, no one here came to us and said, you need to approach us about extending the hotel overlay. This is something that was organically derived in the neighborhood. And so I just wanted to let you know how much we support something like this. And of course, as I understand it, and you can clarify if it's not true, this does not prohibit hotels. They just need to go through a process. And I think the overlay is already well organized and we're simply adding to it. And I'll just rest on that. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Jennifer Shearer. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Shearer. I'm also a resident of the Victoria Neighborhood neighborhood, as well as on the board of the V&A. I don't need to talk much. I think you've heard what most of the residents have said. We've certainly spent a huge amount of time talking with the community, people who use the area, and there is overwhelming support for this, and that the goal would be to have you guys vote on this today. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gloria Williams. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
My name is Gloria Williams, president of the Kyle Brownville Neighborhood Association. And we request that you vote on this request today, the hotel overlay. As you know, you have approved at least 12 projects in the Kyle Brownville neighborhood. And we want to keep the character and the integrity of our neighborhood intact. We are currently working with CHSA and the City of Savannah to assist.
Ms. Williams, can you step up closer to the mic, please, so we can record you? Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. We are currently working with the CHSA and the City of Savannah to assist potential buyers, homeowners, property owners in creating and retaining affordable and workforce housing in the Kyle Brownville neighborhood. As I first said, you know, because you have approved at least 12 projects within the neighborhood. Those, some are under construction, some are under renovation, and a couple are to be started. So we're asking you today to please vote on this request. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Nancy Meyer.
Morning, Nancy Meyer. I am the current president of the V&A. I don't have anything else to add in addition to what Ryan and has already said. What I did want to do is to bring attention to the fact that we have extraordinarily broad support for this petition. We have at least 33 letters of support that were copied to both the V&A and the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association that don't appear on the agenda. And we have hundreds of signatures of support that we gathered in Forsyth Park over the last month. I would like to read a letter from somebody that we feel is a good example of the general feeling of most of those letters. And it is from Anna Monzo, who is an architect with GM Shea Architects. Dear Ms. Wilson, I am writing this letter in support of the initiative to amend the zoning map of the Hotel Development Overlay District to extend the boundaries beyond the Savannah Downtown Historic District Overlay to include the Victorian and the Streetcar Historic Overlay Districts. The historic preservation movement in Savannah has consistently worked on keeping the historic fabric and maintaining the essence of what Savannah is known for. Cobblestone streets and Victorian buildings have been protected and improved. Visitors have been able to appreciate the past in this compact city with an extensive history. In parallel, locals continue to be provided with great pride and a sense of belonging, the feeling of being an important part of history attributable to the opportunity gifted by great planning and architecture. However, the continuous growth of such interest in Savannah, although positive for the tourism industry, has taken a toll on the locals' needs and their ability to experience the city. The need for housing, more specifically affordable housing, has become evident with raising rents and little availability of apartments. I believe that one of the key components of a harmonious city, as to most things in life, is finding the right balance between foreign and local. In Savannah's case, between a thriving economy due to the growing hospitality business and tourism.
That's your time.
Okay.
Sorry to cut you off, but we just got to keep it moving.
All right. That's okay. Thank you.
Ms. Davis.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Earlene Davis, Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Savannah. And my comment is this. It appears from listening that a lot of people understood the overlay district. Apparently, the people who were beating us up on Facebook did not, because they were making comments that the Housing Authority was going to demolish public housing and replace it with hotels. So my request is that you continue this until more people understand what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. It's Patricia Jenkins Spady. Please state your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Patricia Jenkins Spady, and I'm a resident of Kyla Brownsville. Having hotels in Kyla Brownsville is not what we want. We want our community to make the improvements that they need to make, but a hotel is not going to help us one iota. We just don't want it. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for a clarification, Ms. Spady, the Kyla Brownsville component of it will be at the next meeting that is supposed to start at 1:30, and we're trying to get there. But just wanted to make sure you're aware of that. Did you catch that, Ms. Spady? Will somebody please give her a heads up back there? But I'll keep going. Ms. Irwin?
Good afternoon. I'm Ms. Portia Irwin, a resident of the Benjamin Van Clark neighborhood. I just wanted to say I concede and am in agreement with Mrs. Davis, Ms. Ellie Isaac, and Dr. Torre. However, I just wanted to attempt to get full clarity of the actual protocol and process due to zoning for the text and the actual map requirements. Those are my concerns, as well as how does this play out with those two communities, Fellwood and Fraser Homes, and why haven't they been rehabilitated like Hitch Village, Garden Homes, and Blackshear?
Some of those components are not within the purview of this body, since this is a opportunity to educate. So some of those things are not in the purview of this body. We don't have any say whatsoever in that regard. But there, regards to the text amendment and zoning, I hope that you have started to gain some clarity. Or if not, just feel free to ask us and we'll communicate what that looks like. All right, thank you. Jennifer Davenport. You signed a speaker card, so I was giving you the opportunity, but if you're gonna submit comment, I would like for you to come to the microphone.
Thank you, sir. I'm against the petition. I was just making sure you knew that because you had called people that were for it up until now. I'm the Vice President of Community Affairs for the Savannah Area Chamber of Commerce, and I appreciate your time this afternoon. I would ask that you continue this petition for the reasons outlined in the letter that was provided to you. I would only like to make one other very brief comment. You know, it was certainly, you know, given us the nickname here that we are the hotel boosters, but in fact, the Savannah Area Chamber of Commerce is made up of 80% small businesses. So we do speak for the small businesses throughout our community when we ask you to continue this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. LaRae Benton. Again, state your name for the record. 2 minutes.
LaRae Benton, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Yamacraw Village, Savannah Yamacraw Association, and First Brian Baptist Church.
Before you get going, for this particular petition, it's nothing to do with Yamacraw. Like,
I get that.
I just want to make sure that we stay on the path of what's currently presented, and I just want to keep this train on the rails.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
That'd be less than 2 minutes.
Gotcha.
All right. One, I'm just saying this strictly. I'm actually supportive of this, because it is an effort to, like you say, for the communities to actually protect their communities by restricting the whole hotels, right? And I'm saying that because we also, you know, the Yamacraw Village community, we actually have that same, you know, that same desire in terms of restricting hotel development in our community. So as an actual border community, when you look at the map, they got us in the green area. You know, we actually want to actually explore a same or similar hotel restriction for the Yamacraw community area between Ann Street all the way over the west boundary, between Bay Street and Oglethorpe, right? And that's something that I would love the opportunity to speak with the MPC staff about. I don't know who is the best, but.
And staff can get with you to get that situated.
Okay, which, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any member of staff.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I'll just get his card, but that's it. I'm supportive of it because we in line.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. And lastly, online is Anthony Maxwell. If you would unmute yourself and you have 2 minutes and state your name for the record. Mr. Maxwell, if you're speaking, you are currently self-muted. If you would unmute to submit your comment, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, thank you. Anthony Maxwell with the Yamacraw Restoration Project. And yes, we are in support of preserving all the neighborhoods in the downtown area so that they are free from hotel expansion to the point where it's devastating to the community. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that concludes public comment. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Real quick, I'd just like to say that, you know, perhaps there's more future in citizen-initiated measures like this, and so I'd like to offer my services if you want to talk about doing something like this yourself or for your community. I've actually got master's degrees in city planning and urban design, so I can help out.
Just to clarify, we have been in many conversations with Kyler Brownville just through the timing of their own survey and petition. We are petitioning separately, but the goal would be going forward to City Council that we all petition as one, and we share some of the same issues and concerns with Kyler Brownville, and have, our neighborhood association leadership has been in close contact throughout this. So to dispel any discussion that, about us operating independently, that's simply not the case.
Thank you. All right, so that closes the floor. We'll enter into board discussion. What's that motion? Yeah. So is there a motion on the floor, I should say?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Miller.
So I think it's really important to recognize that our neighborhood associations who represent our neighborhoods and our residents who live in the city are here petitioning their governments and the portions of their governments to make some important changes that they feel are warranted. And I think that the fact that there are three here today are really important. The fact that we've heard from others who want to similarly understand and get involved and understand what are the best approaches to protecting neighborhoods and the value of the neighborhoods that they have currently is really important. So I think from my position as city manager, when this petition gets to city council, it will be as a three neighborhood petition, if not more. Equally as, and we should give our neighborhood associations great weight as well, as they represent the residents. Equally important to that, I think we've established a process by which we created the hotel district overlay, and that we are a large community and have a big table that we have to get folks around. And zoning matters and matters that deal with private property are complicated issues and have to have all the stakeholders around the table to be able to effectively put forward a policy and a proposal to be considered by city council and to be effectuated by staff. So I tend to support the MPC staff recommendation to continue this item so that more coordination can be done to expand this overlay district. But I'll say from my position as city manager that, you know, I'll be doing that too before it gets to city council. So I just want to be upfront with that we do need to be able to make sure that we have a process that's inclusive, even if that process is inclusive of industries and entities that we want to in some ways restrict or contain. So I just want to be upfront with my comments there, but I am supportive of expanding the hotel district overlay and finding the places where certain developments should be protected and identifying places where we want to be able to steer and shape development. And a last comment, Chairman, if I could, we're seeing a lot of activity with land use in the city. This is because there's a tremendous amount of development pressure and a tremendous amount of growth. And we have an opportunity as a community to shape the kind of development that we want to see, shape the kind of development that's going to support our economic opportunity and shape the kind of development that's going to support our quality of life. So more intentionality around our planning, the more information that we can give property owners or potential people who want to be investing in the city and investing in that kind of development to shape them towards the things that we want to see is going to be more beneficial for everybody in the room. So I will be supporting more coordination around this effort, but I'll also be supporting an eventual expansion of the overlay as well.
Thank you, Mr. Melder.
Mr. Motion to approve staff's recommendation. I will say that on the basis of while I am in complete support of the overlay because of the amount of disinformation and misinformation that has been given to the community, I believe it is an opportunity for us to educate our community as to what we're doing. That way they will know exactly how this affects their land and how this affects their land values. Having said.
Is there a second to the motion?
Why already second?
Any discussion on the motion? Ms. Jarrett.
I'm not sure if it's discussion on the motion per se. Part of this whole thing is the concern about hotels coming in. I was just wondering whether there was a possibility of a moratorium for a short period of time in the area that's being designated as the new overlay area to give time for the meeting.
Is that a question for me?
Mm-hmm.
The state does not like moratoriums from a private property matter point of view. I think that would be up to city council. In my review of that, because I did explore that question, was that there were no current properties within either three of the neighborhoods that could develop a hotel by right right now currently. And so, you know, there would have to be some kind of specific process that comes through MPC and the council for any type of development like that to happen in these three neighborhoods. So in some ways, a stay on that type of development would be redundant. However, I think there is some need to move with urgency around making sure that we have the right kind of plans in place.
Agree.
So wait a second, excuse me, Mr. Latrika, one second. So technically the route that comment or question went was not necessarily directly in line with the motion. And I want to keep it there so that we can keep the meeting in order. I would like to submit my personal comment, and my personal comment is I'm very appreciative and applaud the turnout and the grassroots efforts to be proactive. But I will absolutely, and I'm fully in support of an overlay, but in the vein of due process for both community members as well as property owners that are not present in the meeting, which I understand Mr. Combs made a very valid position. If the notification went out, people could come. I do support the continuance primarily for the fact that there is a ton of misinformation that needs to be dispelled. There is a ton of education that needs to be afforded to the community. And quite frankly, let me back up. Essentially, those are the reasons why I would support the continuance. And I encourage and implore each and every one of you to have been this proactive to this point, to stay in the spirit of accountability, stay in the spirit of participation, and show up to each of the meetings that's surrounding this type of effort to make sure you understand what the process looks like, to make sure that when you bring something to the bring something forward, continuous isn't even really an option because you've gone through all of the proper steps and things can be properly executed. Anything else on the motion?
Yes, but Chair, if you don't mind, I agree that I believe that there should be an extension of the overlay district. I also support a continuous, but for different reasons. Yes, because of the misinformation, but in addition to that, we need to address, with regard to the misinformation, what the impact might be on existing residents in terms of their insurance, as well as the impact on affordable housing and our mandate to improve affordable housing in the city of Savannah. Those, if we decide to do the continuance and we go out with additional education, it's not just for outreach, but we also want to educate the community on those issues as well.
Yeah, and I don't think we have to necessarily describe those details in this point, but I think we can get with staff to express our desire of what that outreach should look like and get that coordinated with the city effort. So let's go ahead and take action. As we know, we have quite a few members for the next meeting to lined up and waiting. So the motion is on the floor made by Mr. Irvin and seconded by Mr. Wildwoody to approve the petition, the staff recommendation, excuse me. So we'll go into a vote. Mr. Welch?
No.
All right. Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
No.
All right. Excuse me. Mr. Noah?
No.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Amick?
Yes.
I too vote yes. So the petition is continued. And again, I encourage you all to continue in the process and stay present before your elected officials and engaged in the process. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is other business. There is none listed.
Mr. Stevens, don't forget, we have to vote on item number 6 because there were two separate items.
My apologies.
We have to vote on item number 6.
So that was for item number 5 for the text amendment. One second. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would please be expeditious. If you all would please be expeditious in exiting, that would be greatly appreciated so we can finish up the business that we need to handle in order to get into the next meeting. All right, so we got the next one. So item number 6 would be the zoning component, the zoning map component, correct? All right. Would they have a motion on that one?
Irvin, motion to continue.
Do we have a second?
Noah, second.
Motion on the floor made by Mr. Noah, made by Mr. Irvin and seconded by Mr. Noah to continue item number 6. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion carries, and that is continued as well. The next item on the agenda is other business. There's none listed. There is no executive session. Do we have a motion? Move to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, Noah.
So moved. Meeting adjourned.